Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a Whitley comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney. That's 310 Pitt Street, should you ever find yourself in Sydney, or if you cannot find yourself here, why not find them online, kingscomics.com.
Perfect.
Every single comic we talk about on the show can be found at King's. It's also a lovely place to go with great air conditioning.
It is.
Wish we were recording there today.
Same.
My name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And this, look, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I reckon next week's show is going to be the best episode of Serious Issues ever made.
Nice.
Because we're doing 2 weeks in one. This is the slow summer.
I think it will definitely be the longest.
Yes. and I'm definitely a quantity over quality
person.
Absolutely. So that's
absolutely.
Why I think it will be the best. We've been kind of holidaying and, you know, all the extra holiday bullshit that you have to do in January has meant we've been recording a week behind each time. This episode, by the time it goes up, there will be 2 new weeks of comics that have come out since the week of comics we're about to talk about came out.
And I still haven't finished reading the week that we're about to talk about.
Yeah. So,
look, I'm behind, guys.
With the knowledge that next week may well be the best episode of Serious Issues ever recorded, I present to you the potentially worst episode of Serious Issues ever recorded.
At the very least, the most average.
So strap yourselves in, everybody. It's going to be real mediocre today. Because I read most of these comics before going to Singapore 10 days ago.
Nice.
And then I had just a stack of them that I was like, okay, cool. And when the kids are asleep or when we go to bed, I'll just get through this pile. And I was just like, oh, fuck you. Comics. I don't know, it felt like a real chore.
Yeah.
So I read the bulk of these on an overnight flight from Singapore to Sydney 2 days ago with both of my children sleeping on my legs, which I can now barely feel.
I think it's just impressive that you took a stack of comics with you on a plane.
When you have two kids and you go on holidays, you have to bring 10 bags.
Right.
So there's room in one of those bags for a stack of comics.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, you can't bring nappies just in case you can't buy nappies in the country, because what if this country doesn't have nappies?
All those babies walking around, poo dribbling down their legs.
So let's kick off this episode the same way we do, just letting you know that this episode features reviews of comics that came out 2 weeks ago, and next week we'll have a double week in which we review. I've got to try and read 70 comics.
Good Lord.
From tonight till next Monday.
I've never hoped for a late shipment, but I hope for a late shipment today.
So let's kick things off with our beginning segment, First Things First, in which we review all of the new issues that came out the week that we were reviewing. And we got a small stack of number ones, but Siobhan appears to have only read one of them.
Yeah.
So let's review that one first. It's
all right.
From Marvel. It is Old Man Hawkeye, number one, by a writer that I'm not familiar with at all. His last name is Sachs.
And he's nice.
Ethan Sachs at that, with art by Marco Cicchetto, colors by Andre Mossa. This takes place in the same world as Old Man Logan.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a prequel comic, because in that book written by Mark Millar with Steve McNiven, is it Steve McNiven?
I don't know. I've never read it.
Really? Wow.
Just doesn't appeal to me.
So in that book, an old man Logan, old Wolverine, in a world in which he's killed all the X-Men and he's like living with a bunch of regret. Yeah, because he got mind control powers.
Right.
He ends up teaming up with a now blind Hawkeye to take down The Hulk? I can't remember. Something like that.
The Hulk's inbred children?
Yeah.
Omar's horrible. He's like a horrible man.
So
I don't know what he's like in person.
This is a prequel comic to that event in which we basically see Hawkeye, who is going blind. It's, you know, still a post-apocalyptic scenario. The world is no better than it is in Old Man Logan. But I actually think I enjoyed this more. I got a bit more out of this story than I did out of the kind of, like, you know, almost not quite shock element that Miller goes for in Old Man Logan. But it's like, you know, it's very much like, and now this one's dead. And now this guy's evil now. And blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, mining that world for something that I found a bit more interesting. And we see Old Man Hawkeye. Slightly young Old Man Hawkeye.
Slightly younger Old Man Hawkeye. Is everyone in this universe just called Old Man?
Yeah.
Old Man
Wasp.
Ultron.
Old Man Ultron is married to Hawkeye's
ex-wife.
I like that.
That was maybe the silliest part of this whole comic.
Yeah, there was some real goofy stuff in this. But
taking itself so seriously.
Yeah.
Like, super silly. But then, like, Ultron is standing there with his arms around his wife, like, honey.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that that he takes on a bunch of, like, the Madrox gang.
Yeah.
The multiple man from the X-Men and X-Factor. Except they have kind of given up. Like, they've rebelled against the original Madrox, so they're just evil guys now. And
with sweet moustaches.
Yeah, big old cowboy moustaches.
I really like the art on this.
Yeah,
Chichetto does a really killer job. There are some, like, the scene where Hawkeye is shooting all the inbred Madroxes through their faces was really good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, yes, this comic takes itself so seriously, but it's able to with that level of this level of art, like it's not cheesecakey at all. It's very, and the colors are quite muted, and I think that really aids the story quite well.
I would have liked it a little bit poppier color wise, but that's a personal choice.
Sure, no one likes a muted color set. I think it works for this story.
Yeah.
But what is fun is kind of seeing all of the various, you know, Marvel enemies that are in this desolate wasteland and where they've ended up. There's a great Venom moment.
It really is.
Really, really gory.
And I like the bit where Hawkeye brings Old Man Logan a Xbox for his daughter.
Yes. and so, yeah, I don't know if it's going to bring us right up to the point where Wolverine recruits Hawkeye to help him. But in this, we see Hawkeye trying to recruit Wolverine.
Yes.
And failing at doing so. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what this is going to be about. It's basically him going on a mission that he doesn't think he's going to return to.
Losing his eyesight, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's actually pretty, like, considerably better than I thought it was going to be.
Agreed.
This
appealed to me much more than I had anticipated.
Yeah, so well done, whoever you are, Ethan Sachs.
Ethan Sachs.
Pretty good story.
Good old Sachs.
Good old Sachsy. So I also read a bunch of other number ones that Siobhan did not, but maybe there's some surprise ones that she did. I did not read.
It just isn't.
Deja Thoris.
You know, I even picked this up because I've never read a Deja Thoris comic, and it's such a, like, staple of the tits covers genre of comics.
The scantily clad, sword-bearing women
comics.
So this is written by Amy Chu and Pasquale Quilano on art through Dynamite. It's one of those 25-cent zero issues that Dynamite put out.
Mm-hmm.
I got like 4 pages into it, and it just is, it's just really uninspiring.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, you know,
it's like the John Carter of Mars universe, I think.
Is it right?
Yeah.
It was
his girlfriend or
it was
something.
A schnooze fest for me because I have no tether to the character whatsoever.
Nice.
But I did enjoy Ninjak versus the Valiant universe.
That looks cool.
Well, feeling in a similar way to Old Man Hawkeye, like, I was like, oh, I'm not going to enjoy this at all. It's written by Elliot Rahal and art by Joe Bennett and Belladino Bravo, with colorists by the one and only Ulysses Arriola.
The best name of all time.
And this ties into, like, a YouTube series that Valiant did.
What?
Which had, like, you know, a pretty cool cast. There was, like, some ex-Power Rangers in the cast as, like, Ninjak or whatever. And I was like, this isn't going to be good. Guess what? It's great.
Oh, that's great.
It's just like a really, really fun romp through the Valiant universe featuring a Ninjak who has to go rogue and take them all down non-lethally.
Why does he have to go rogue?
Because someone is threatening some people that are important to him, and so he has to steal something. It's
great.
This doesn't have that many Valiant characters that I'm not familiar with. It had Livewire, who was in... The Secret Weapons?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sets up that... in the next few issues, we're going to see Bloodshot, Archer and Armstrong, Exo Manowar, and the Eternal Warrior try and take down Ninjak.
Cool.
It was really, really fun. Like, it's like, it's not like, you know, it's not that clever in any way, but it was just like a really fun action comic.
Great.
And you got to read those sometimes.
It's kind of all that I want.
It was a way more fun action comic than Action Comics was this week. I'll tell you that much. And I also read through IDW Star Wars Forces of Destiny. This is the series of one-shots they're doing about the various women in the Star Wars universe throughout time. This one is about Rey. So it's Star Wars Forces of Destiny Rey. I was excited about this because it was written by Jodie Hauser, with art by Ariana Florian and colors by Adele Matera. I loved the Leia issue that came out the week before this one. And so I had high expectations for this, especially because of Hauser on the writing. But
did Hauser write the last issue as well?
No, it was written and brilliant art by Elsa Charitier.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize she wrote it, but great.
She wrote it with someone called Periac Colinet. Colinet, maybe, I don't know. But this is just pretty much like it fills in like a small amount of time within the movie, within Force Awakens, in which Rey finds BB-8.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, one of those all ages comics that I got nothing out of as an adult, whereas the Leia one I thought was just brilliant. Just a really, really fun, simple story, which again, it filled a gap in Empire Strikes Back, but I think it filled in a gap from a period of time that we don't see within the movie, whereas this one does, and I think it just felt like pointless. This felt like a animated short that got made using like Shockwave Flash.
Nice.
And was like a browser animation that like they use as like additional material to like sell a makeup line based off of something within a movie.
Wow.
It's very specific.
That sounds kind of great.
look, the art was competent. The story was like, you know, it was just, I expect more from Hauser, basically.
Yeah. I think the art matters hugely, especially in terms of all ages stuff.
Yeah.
When it's not quite the same level, it's a bit disappointing.
100%. So next week, I'll be reviewing two of these next week in the next episode.
Woo.
Hera and
who's Hera
from the Clone Wars? And Ahsoka and Padme.
Great.
Looking forward to the Rose and Paige one from The Last Jedi.
Cool.
Finally, my favorite number one of the week was a Statics Press, which is the basically European reprint imprint that Titan Comics do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by someone called Pau, P-A-U. It's created, written, and drawn by Pau. It's called Atlas and Axis. And I'm just going to give you a little skim through
of what
this is.
That looks cute.
Atlas is a dog, and Axis is also a dog.
Great.
And in this world of dogs, a bunch of other dogs, or like foxes, I guess, are going around killing. It's like basically like a Viking book featuring like dogs.
Great.
And these wolves are like moving from like town to town on their boats and then just slaughtering all the men and kidnapping all the women and children.
Wow.
And so Atlas and Axis are kind of like off fucking around and then they return to their town and everyone's dead.
That's really heavy. And it looks like an all ages book.
Yeah. Their sister's missing, but it's like an all ages. It's a classic European, you know,
trait
of like this very, very cute, beautifully drawn heavy shit.
Yeah.
I would put it in a similar kind of mold as like a Black Sad book, for example.
Yeah.
And
or it looks kind of Beasts of Burden-y or
yes.
Mouse Guard.
Yeah, look, this is like far away my favorite comic of the week.
Cool.
One of those ones you know, extra big issue. Was really like, you know, was this quite heavy story of like, you know, revenge and loss, but also like they're dogs, so like they smell each other's butts.
Nice.
And like he loves smelling this gold dog's butt and hopes she'll let him smell her butt again. And they find like a poo, like someone else, like the wolf's big old turd at one point, and they both piss on it to mark their territory on the poo. And
I'm very into it.
Yeah, like, so he had like these very silly moments like that within this, you know, quite sad story.
The colors are beautiful.
Oh man, the art is incredible, and apparently this has all been like Kickstarted, or he has like a Patreon.
Oh, cool.
Atlas and Axis. If you go to patreon.com/PAW, you can find out more about this book if you missed this issue. I loved this. This is something that I would highly recommend picking up the singles, but more importantly, waiting for that trade, because this will be a very, very beautiful looking book when it's all collected.
Great.
Highly recommend it. I might leave this one for you to read.
Yes, please.
When I finish. Oh, actually, no, we've got two more weeks to read. Maybe I'll hold it for a bit, then give it to you as your reward for getting through the next week.
I read this. Was this from this week? And did you read it? Is this a
That's
real
just say it is,
comic?
Sure. I didn't read it, no.
Okay, well, I read, for some reason, X-Men Gold Annual, number one, which was the 30th anniversary of Excalibur, the British
Claremont
team.
Created. Is it Claremont?
I don't know. Yeah. But it's Captain Britain and those people. Prestige, Jean... God, what's her fucking name? Rachel Gray was in that, apparently. Anyway, this is basically like a whole comic about Captain Britain's had a baby with his wife, Megan.
Because all superheroes have children now.
Absolutely. And they've invited Nightcrawler, Kitty, and who else? Was it Storm? Oh, no, Rachel Gray over to meet the baby. And it turns out the baby is like super smart. And it was actually like a really cute issue. It was really... good fun. It was
silly.
Who
wrote this one?
This is written by Mark Guggenheim.
All right, cool.
And Leah Williams. Pencils by Aletha E. Martinez. Yeah, I thought this was really good fun. Really silly. Just like a little one shot. And it ends with them being like, will you be the godparents of our baby? And everyone's like, yes. And it ends with a group hug.
How many godparents is this baby going to have?
Three.
Okay.
That's all right, right?
That's acceptable.
That's reasonable. Anyway, it was pretty cute.
That's nice. Thank you for reading two number ones.
You're welcome.
Let's play a game now called Roll the Dice for Marvel, Image, and DC.
Great.
I just want to let everyone know a little bit of forewarning. The biggest pile that I have this week is my other publisher's pile. It was
same.
A lot that came out this week.
I've
really,
got
really good stuff,
image
too.
Book.
So let's roll the dice to find out what we talk about first. If we roll a 1 to 2, it is Image. 3 to 4, it's Marvel. 5 to 6, it's DC. And first up, number 3, so Marvel.
Great.
And then number 5, so DC. So Marvel, DC, Image, and then finally other publishers is how we're going to go. Let's kick things off with Marvel. I'm going to find a book that we both read. Phoenix Resurrection, Jean Grey, issue number 3, written by Matt Rosenberg, with art on this one by Joe Bennett, again, and Lorenzo Ruggiero on inks. So this is written by this is drawn by the same guy who did the pencils on the Valiant Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe book this week. There you go.
I don't heaps love
this
these
is
pencils.
A dumb book.
Yeah, it definitely is a dumb book, but it's got some funny moments, right?
Yeah,
the bit where Jean Grey is like, I need to get my car fixed, so she takes it to the mechanic, who is Mr. Patches. What's his name?
Mr. Patch,
which is Wolverine's alter ego when he wears an eye patch.
Oh right, yeah,
and then
sure.
He's like, seems like he's trying to seduce her. Very funny. That was pretty funny.
Well, here's a part of this book that I like. I like Jean Grey stuck in this weird reality that she's trying to escape from that occasionally bleeds into the regular Marvel Universe world.
Yes.
What I don't like is that there are three X-Men teams all around the world trying to find this weird, you know, occurrences of the Phoenix. I just wish it was the Jean Grey stuff.
Yeah.
I
liked the inclusion of Emma Frost.
Sure. I mean, who doesn't love that? But there's just like, I don't know.
What is Emma Frost up to these days?
Mourning Scott Summers, I guess.
Nice. Drinking wine, sitting in a big chair, wearing a corset.
Yeah, perfect.
Classic Emma.
What'd you expect? I don't know. I just...
This is like, it is a means to an end. And I think that Rosenberg is doing a pretty capable job of it. I think it's fine. I think the art could be drastically better, and if they had a consistent art team, we would probably have a book that actually was something instead of this kind of nonsense. But like, at least we're starting to get a little bit of a like idea of what's going on, like that's starting to make slightly more sense.
Yeah, I do like that Strong Guy is a part of one of the teams,
and I like this design of Beast.
Yeah sure. But I don't get it. I don't get why they need to turn this into an event when it could have been quite a nice mini-series that led to the return of that original Jean Grey.
Absolutely. And you kind of think that, like, if it hadn't... Like, I don't really understand why it needs to be weekly.
Yeah.
Which just seems to really push them on the art end.
In fact, this could have tied in so well to the Jean Grey series that Hopeless was doing. They could have just co-written this as, like, issues 11 to 15.
Yep. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Instead, we have to have all the other X-Men dragged into this, kicking and screaming. Oh, well. Oh, well.
How many Wolverines?
More than enough.
Two.
I also read The Punisher this week.
Same,
did you read The Punisher? It's another
Man.
One written by Matt Rosenberg with art by Guy Villanova and colors by Lee Lurridge. This is a heavy-handed book, and it's funny saying that about a Punisher book because they all are, but this is like him kind of just like killing people in Europe because war's bad.
But he's he is like a one man war. I don't, yeah, I think this is super heavy handed. Like the Punisher going through and like releasing people from concentration camps, I think is like mega eye roll. And I liked what Becky Cloonan was doing more, I think, with the character. I think I like, I think the best Punisher issues, you know, that one, I think it was like a Jim Lee one where he's like just the supermarket and then shit goes down and he has to like be a vigilante in the supermarket.
Oh yeah, so great.
That's like the best issue of Punisher of all time.
But I know what you mean.
Don't it's talk
like,
to me about
like,
that.
It's like you put him in a weird scenario. You have him facing off against either like, you know, nameless kind of,
yeah,
you know, soldiers or terrorists or whatever, or you have him against like, you know, a bigger than,
yeah,
you know, a slightly bigger than usual kind of bad guy. Street level, I agree.
But
this is like, I mean, look, putting him in the War Machine armor is a fun idea. I think it's taking him to a war-torn European third world country.
Yeah.
That's like maybe made this not as good as it should be.
Agreed.
Like if it was him having to infiltrate an army base in the War Machine, mm-hmm. like him having to use like non-lethal rounds or something like that, mm-hmm. to fight American soldiers, that's mm-hmm. more appealing.
Absolutely.
Don't have him being like this bizarre savior of this non-existent yes. European place.
Icky is the vibe of that one, I think.
Hey, we talk about it in a positive light all the time, and I think we need some positivity right
Yay.
Now. Runaways by Rainbow Rowell, Chris Anker, Matthew Wilson, issue number 5.
Her name is really Rainbow Rowell. Have we talked about that before?
I mean,
she seems like a delight. I know nothing about her, but she seems like a ray of sunshine. I'm very into it.
What, so you think her name should be Ray instead?
Yes, I think Ray her name Rowell. Should be Ray of Sunshine, Rainbow Rowell.
Everybody loves Ray Rowell.
Anyway, this is great.
This is probably my favorite Marvel book right now.
Yeah.
It's like it's it reminds me of what makes Thor so great. It's very much its own story
mm-hmm.
that's going so big and incorporating mm-hmm. so many characters and ideas. It looks unbelievable. Like, you know, Chris Anker is, you know, probably on par with Russell Dauterman. They even, you know, they Absolutely. Both love drawing hunky chests.
They love it.
And everyone just looks beautiful in their books.
And does Matthew Wilson do the colors on Thor at the moment as well? Because either way, Possibly. There's like the everyone looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's beautifully colored. It looks incredible.
Everyone looks gorgeous, but not conventionally so all the time as mm-hmm. well, which is really mm-hmm. cool. And the outfits are great. Like,
yep.
you know, issue to issue, all the characters are wearing different outfits. Not
Molly has so
shit.
Many silly hats.
Yes, totally. Chase is a beautiful man.
I agree.
And Carolina is gorgeous too. Like,
yep.
a great hairstyles as well as.
Gert's the best.
And what I love about this this book is just like, you know, how they're not best friends yet. They're all so damaged from, like, you know, what being on the outskirts of the superhero community will do mm-hmm. to you. And also being, you know, a runaway from their parents who are now all dead.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, pulling Gert back from out of time. And it's fucked all of them up. And
yep.
I like that it's going to be a long road for them to accept each other as friends again.
Absolutely.
And they're all of them are so scared to make the first step before someone else does. I don't know.
This book just has like it has, every character has a nice moment in this book.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much that happens in this issue. There are like really lighthearted, fun moments as well as like real moments of teen angst. Everyone's flawed. I can't say enough good things about this book. I really love it.
Totally. And it's so much like, you know, like this is the first time we see them face off against a threat.
Yeah.
And the threat is quite an amusing one,
mm-hmm.
which just shows that this book is more about their relationships. And it's not quite a them versus the world narrative yet, but mm-hmm. I gather that. I mean, it's definitely heading in that direction. But like them finding friendship again is such a great drive
Absolutely.
For the story. I love this book.
It's so good, guys. Pick it up.
Pick it up. I'm sure that the first trade must be out very soon.
Yep.
Avengers started their big.
I didn't read that.
Oh wow,
because I'm
funny.
An idiot. I don't know why.
No, I mean,
you're
not really an idiot. It's kind of this book is an idiot, if anything. So there's now a weekly Avengers book, and it's been written by Mark Waid, Al Ewing, and Jim Zub with kind of rotating artists. The good thing about this is that it's the creative teams who were working on all the Avengers books before they folded into one.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing the coming together of the new Avengers. The US / new US Avengers, you're seeing the Avengers and you're seeing the Uncanny Avengers
right.
all together with the respective creative teams kind of doing different art duties issue to issue, and then it's all being co-written by Wade, Ewing, and Zub. What is boring about this is that that's way too many characters.
Yeah.
And it's just like another big world-threatening event. Looks like someone gets, you know, the character that gets taken out in the first issue is Jarvis. He's not quite dead yet. I just like, I don't, who cares about Jarvis? Am I losing listeners by saying that?
No.
Because
no, I don't think anyone cares about Jarvis, do they?
Like, I think making him the AI, the like, you know, the unit inside Tony Stark's head in the movies, in his butt, yes, yeah, that's right, was like one of the smartest moves the MCU did. And it's one of the ones, you know, everyone complains about synchronicity between, you know, when the comics start mirroring the movies, but I just kind of wish that would happen.
Yeah, he's just super unnecessary. And then being like, oh no, Jarvis might be killed. The Avengers is
butler. And it's like, why do the Avengers have a butler? That's dumb.
It's dumb.
Just build a robot butler.
Yes. Like, no, then they take over the world. Oh. Haven't we learned anything from Ultron?
But we'll make,
he was just supposed to get tea.
Make Vision create family who can be the butlers.
That's very complicated.
All
anyway,
right. Continue having this old man, eternal old man. Like, the only butler in comics that's okay is Alfred.
Yeah.
Like, I'm against butlers.
I agree. Anti-butler.
Anyway.
It's like a Gerard butler.
What if the Avengers had a Gerard butler?
I think that's way better.
And he just reluctantly, like, makes them breakfast.
Yeah. And then it's like, I have to go make another really substandard romantic comedy, guys. I'm going to be out for a couple of weeks.
And I can't even remember what happens in this. There's some world-threatening threat that happens. And then there's, like, a bunch of the Avengers, like, freeze. And they're, like, just, like Spider-Man is frozen. And Black Panther is frozen. And the champions are frozen.
Oh, no.
And then it's up to this ragtag bunch of Falcon and Hercules and Rogue. I don't know. There's a bunch of them. All of them. They're all going to assemble. And
do they assemble?
Well, then this woman who was like in the statues of the Marvel Legacy one shot.
Yep.
She shows up, and apparently her name is like Valerie. Something that starts with V. Victory Valerie. I don't know.
She's supposed Victory to be Val.
Valua. Potentially it's Val Richards. I don't know who it is. And I guess we'll find out week to week.
Don't care.
But what is cool is that it kind of brings in this character that I've never heard of, Miguel Santos, who used to call himself Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he gets brought in as an Avenger because they need all the Avengers that they can get.
Right.
I don't know. His kind of like narrative in this issue is kind of like the strongest part of the issue.
That's cool.
Anyway. I'll keep reading this just because it is fun reading a dumb event. But this certainly is one.
Nice.
And I reckon you could just start picking up the next issue and just start reading it and you'd be fine. Yeah. Also, lenticular covers, they're dumb. Despicable Deadpool.
I read this.
Yeah, cool. That's great. Bucket List, Part 1, written by Jerry Duggan with art by Matteo Lolli and colors by Ruth Redmond. Now, I've been trying to get you to read Deadpool for a while.
Yeah.
What enticed you to read this one?
Start of a new arc. I was like, might as well.
Yeah, cool. Deadpool has been given a list of people that he needs to kill so Strife doesn't kill Deadpool's family.
Cool. Who's Deadpool's family?
Deadpool has a daughter.
Okay.
Because all superheroes have children kids now.
Absolutely. Legacy,
exactly. And so this sees Deadpool, like, quite brutally take down someone that used to date Cable at one point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we see him agree to take down someone else. Oh, yeah. The best part of this issue is he tracks down Steve-el.
Yep.
Steve Rogers, the evil Steve. Nazi version that was in Secret Empire. And he blames...
Just puts a snake on him.
Yeah. He blames everything bad that's happened to him on Steve-el. And I think I actually quite enjoyed...
Mm.
His interactions with this character that I would happily never see again.
Absolutely.
But he works in this, you know. He was the one that told Deadpool to kill the guy from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent Coulson.
And now, you know, Deadpool is not he's kind of, you know, back to his old bad ways. He's not
back
a hero
on his
anymore.
Bullshit.
And the end of this issue sees Rogue basically, she's agreed to track him down and take him down.
There was some, like, I really enjoyed the balance of, like, funny moments with, like, like quite serious, like pathosy moments, and then also like the reminders that Deadpool isn't a good guy or a bad guy. He's
totally
just a guy.
Exactly. I think, and that's what, even like when he was a hero, that was like a big part of what people loved about Duggan's Deadpool run.
Yeah,
it's great.
I also really enjoyed him communicating with Strife through a laptop in an Apple store.
Yes,
that made me laugh.
Yeah, and there are lots of funny moments. Yeah. It's not just like him making fucking jokes about his shaft and pubes.
There's no pubes jokes in this. Very disappointing. More pubes, everyone. It was good.
So I am a little bit behind on Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, but I started, I read the first issue of this arc, and the issue number 28 is the second issue of this arc, which is called the, what's it called? The something nut planet? The forbidden planet.
Yes.
And it's the first issue leading into this was so funny, about basically like these squirrels have kind of like taken over, but created this weird world for Nancy and Tippy Toe to live in, in which they, every, like, you know, Squirrel Girl and all the characters within Squirrel Girl's universe are just basically asking them how Squirrel Girl took down Galactus.
Yep.
And I don't know where it
turns out it's because there were some space grifters dressed as the Silver Surfer trying to scam them out of some money. And then this issue has, like, Squirrel Girl and Loki go up against Dormammu. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah. Anyway, it's great. Like, it is always great. It is continues to be excellent.
Yep.
Good job, team.
Ryan North, Erica Henderson, Rico Renzi doing the best work they ever can.
They absolutely
can. At all times.
It's so funny, guys.
It's so good.
I love forcing that book on people.
Daredevil this week, issue number 597. So, you did not like the arc in which Wilson Fisk was made the mayor of New York City.
Yep.
Because of the Trump comparisons.
Yeah.
Well, would it make you laugh greatly if I told you that his deputy mayor is?
Is it Trump?
It's Matt Murdock.
Oh.
It's Gerard Butler.
No, why is he his deputy mayor?
So basically...
Also, I just can't deal with the, like, everyone knows he's Daredevil. Now no one knows he's Daredevil.
So no one knows he's Daredevil.
Why? Because Fisk doesn't know he's Daredevil.
No. Okay. No one knows he's Daredevil.
Fisk is an idiot.
But Fisk has had problems with Matt Murdock anyway.
Yeah.
And so his idea is by keeping his enemies closer, as close as possible, he's basically given...
Keep him in his pocket.
Well, exactly. He's given... he's not just in his pocket, but he's also just giving him shitty busy work to keep himself occupied. Basically, he's got all these, like, you know, books upon books of lore that he's got someone reading out to Matt Murdock, because Matt Murdock's blind and his books aren't available in Braille. So that's with the idea that he won't be able to stop Fisk from achieving what he needs to achieve to make New York a better place. I think Charles Soule is doing great work with this now, because he's basically made Murdock and Daredevil two separate characters, because they can't exist. He interacts with the same characters, but completely differently.
Yeah.
I think that's actually quite, like, you know, that definitely has been done before, but it's really, really fun.
That sounds much more appealing to me. This sounds way more fun.
And so Charles Soule did great work when he was doing a lot of the Inhuman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're some of the few people in the world that will say that. I quite enjoyed all the Inhuman stuff that Charles Soule did. This actually sees brought into Daredevil. One of the better characters from the Inhumans is Frank McGee, the kind of like officer kind of guy who can freeze people with like massive blasts of light from his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of he calls in a favor to Daredevil to help bring down someone called Muse, an Inhuman called Muse. Yeah. It's fun. It's cool kind of seeing Soul work with the Inhumans characters again.
And also, like, back in his sort of sweet spot of doing legal dramas.
Yes, 100%. Really is.
Do you reckon I could jump on that with that issue, or is it worthwhile going back?
I mean, that's the beauty of, I think, all Marvel comics, you know, give or take, you know, you couldn't jump in on Runaways.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the straight-up superhero comics, like, even bad Marvel comics I find easy to read, that I think that's why I'm way less prone to dropping them, whereas a DC comic, I'll just be like, I'm fucking lost, I don't care.
I'm out.
Like, actually, I angrily drop DC comics, whereas with Marvel comics, I'm like, okay, that's got to be the last one, and then I still pick up it again next week. In short, Marvel are better at putting out bad comics than DC.
That's true. Speaking of, I read X-Men Blue issue 19. Mm-hmm. I think that was from this week. Written by everyone's favorite, Cullen Bunn, and pencils.
Everyone's favorite, Cullen Bunn.
Everyone's favorite, Cullen Bunn. pencils by Abby Silva, and this is still the like original X-Men team being weirdly like shunted through time for some reason, and then they come up against another team of X-Men that look like the original X-Men, but then it turns out, do you remember in, I think it was like Battle of the Atom,
there was this like event ever.
Future X-Men team that was like,
yep,
and I really liked the concept of this, that team, and it never really became
like Jubilee's
cool.
Kid is like the leader? Okay. No, maybe not.
No, there's like Charles Xavier II, Bruiser, which is Molly from Runaways grown up.
That's right.
Raze, who is Wolverine and Mystique's son, Original Beast, Old Man Deadpool, and Zorn, who's actually Jean Grey.
That's right.
Which is like great as a concept, but then...
And Ice Thing,
yes. great as a concept, right. But they never really did anything with them. So I'm kind of like, ooh, I'll read the next issue of this. But I think they're just wrapping up the original X-Men disappearing forever or something.
Right.
Anyway, it's fine.
Yeah, I think what I liked about Age of Ultron that mm-hmm. Bendis wrote was that, like, even though it was the worst, one of the worst events. No, but I mean, it was like, hey guys, we can't time travel anymore.
Mm.
And then he undid it immediately by doing Battle of the Atom, which featured like all these time traveling X teams.
Classic.
But I would love a fucking, until the Fantastic Four get back, like let them time travel all they want.
Yeah.
Stop letting everyone else time travel.
Yes.
Especially the X-Men.
Yes. Agreed. Or change the time travel rules so that it like, doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No.
Last Marvel book for the week is Star Wars Darth Vader, another Charles Soule joint with art by Giuseppe Comencoli, who was just doing such good work on this book. And it, like, you know, in such contrast to all the photo referential bullshit, like his facial work on this is so great.
And I like the colors.
Yeah.
The inks or something. There's a lot of depth.
Inks by Danielle Orlandini and colors by David Curiel. It's a great team. It's a great story where, like, you know, this is in between episode 3 and episode 4. So it's still like you're just more of the same, like a very powerful Darth Vader who's trying to figure out who he is and impress the Emperor. Like, there's not really that much difference between this era and then in between episode 4 and 5, which is what the other Star Wars comics are kind of filling in the gaps of. But it's still really, really fun stories. You basically just see how cold-blooded Darth Vader is as a character. And that's cool. Always interesting. Even though, like, you know, he kills characters off before they matter for future plots, which is frustrating in a way, but also like it kind of just it suits his character, and who cares about it? It's not called Star Wars, whatever the fucking character he just killed.
That's
it's called
true.
Star Wars Darth Vader. So as long as he's still in it and killing people, it's good. Good book. Definitely my favorite Star Wars comic since, I don't know, the high point of Aaron's Star Wars run, or maybe even Lando. That was a good one.
Hmm.
So this is all the Marvel books. Now we said we're going to do DC.
Great.
Yeah, this was my DC pile. I don't know why. It just took me... Like, it took me 3 nights to read Action Comics issue number 995.
I've never, like, wanted to read a comic that had Booster Gold on the cover less.
Did you read it?
No.
Yeah,
I never got to it.
Yeah.
I tried a couple of times.
I don't know. This is written by Dan Jurgens. I've loved this run up and down.
Yeah.
Pencils by Brett Booth, which could have...
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't quite crack it.
So this sees basically like Superman and... You know what it is? It's random time traveling where they don't control it. They just, now we're in this era.
Yeah, and then
you have a one-shot in this era, which is basically him returning to the time that he escaped from, Booster Gold.
Right.
And he gets put in a cell with his dumb father. And Superman's like, Booster Gold's a criminal. I'm not going to help Booster Gold.
What?
And it's like, that's, you know...
That's
like,
not Superman.
He has more nuance than that.
Yeah.
And it was just a real boring issue. And then it doesn't even like... Then it ends with them propelled into a time in which Zod is like... The Emperor.
Oh, I just can't even
like stop using Zod and everything.
Energy to care about that. Dumb, 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 dumb.
Like the Zod is the reason I'm not reading Green Lanterns at the moment because he's like the main threat in that again. It's just like Zod's in everything at the moment.
No one cares.
Less Zod.
Why do we like Zod?
I don't know this. I'm sticking with Action Comics because we're so close to 1,000. I just want to get to 1,000. Not that I've read all 1,000 issues of Action Comics, but I want to be there. The road to 1,000, baby. Let's do
I'll
it.
I'll read 1,000.
Yeah, that's probably the smarter route to take. But there were some genuinely good DC books this
absolutely.
Week and some surprises. But Let's talk about Suicide Squad, because I saw it in your pile.
I did read it, because I couldn't say no to that cover.
Well, it's a rendition of the original Suicide Squad number one, mm-hmm. the Ostrander, and I think actually it's a Howard Chaykin cover, originally. Yep. Basically, it has...
Yeah, it says after Chaykin on it.
There you go. You have eight members of Suicide Squad, and then it says, like, these eight people will put their lives on the line for our country. One of them won't be coming home. Then there is a speech bubble, which did not exist on the original, featuring a character that we've never seen before saying, "It's me, isn't it?" Because that was the whole thing. Like, you know, that first team, Suicide Squad team, they kill off Slipknot, mm-hmm. who is great with ropes. That's his kind of power set. They kill him off very quickly by detonating the bomb in his head.
Nice.
In this one, we're introduced to someone called Juan Soria, who has, after an accident, is able to unlock any lock,
mm-hmm.
And he can also see things before they happen. Or is that just him being able to see that he's going to die because he's expendable, basically?
Yeah, I think he's just realizes that his gimmick isn't good enough and that he's going to get left behind. So is this the first issue that Cy Spurrier has written?
Well, so yeah, we were both drawn to it because of the cover, but then learning that it was written by Cy Spurrier was very, very exciting.
Absolutely. This felt tonally to me the most like a classic Suicide Squad comic.
Agreed.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that a lot of people struggle to write Harley Quinn in a way that is good. I don't think Cy Spurrier necessarily stuck that landing, but this was good fun.
He used her sparingly enough that it isn't too annoying.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
It is genuinely annoying every time she's in this comic. I know. So who is good at writing her? Let's get back to that.
TBD.
The art in this one is by Fernando Pessan, with inks by Declare Albert and colors by Blonde. This basically just is the life of an expendable supervillain who is put on a Suicide Squad team and knows that he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
It gets pretty gruesome throughout this, as we mm-hmm. see various other expendable soldiers and villains taken out quite easily. The core members of the Suicide Squad team kind of just laughing at all the expendable ones. I liked it. It was a grim and kind of very mean-spirited issue, but it was fun.
Absolutely. Really enjoyable.
Yeah.
More of that, please.
And to be continued. So we will be reading, God, it comes out today, Suicide Squad issue number 34.
Does it come out every 2 weeks?
Yep.
Why?
A lot of these DC books do. I think that's why I'm more prone to dropping them.
Yeah.
I dropped The Flash a while ago, and now I'm right back on board.
This is an
incredible arc.
Oh, man.
Joshua Williamson wrote this one with art by Scott Collins, who did so much great Flash stuff with Geoff Johns back in the day. Particularly a great arc about the Rogues with mm-hmm. an excellent Captain Cold issue. And so Scott Collins is back on The Flash for this arc, which is all about the Rogues who have taken over a jail. Kind of like living the best life they can live because everyone thinks they're in prison, but really they're running the prison from below.
That is pretty great.
And this sees the redemption of, he called himself Godspeed, but he was at the start of the Rebirth arc. And I really, that was like the strongest this book has been. He got the Speed Force. He was like
he was a cop.
A cop alongside Barry Allen. When he got the Speed Force, he used it to kill villains instead of the code of not killing anybody. So he's in prison, but even though this issue still ends with him still in prison, he's redeemed himself somewhat, if not in front of Barry's eyes, in front of his own.
Great.
I really, really enjoyed this arc. I don't love it when the Rogues go full evil and kill people,
mm-hmm.
But you know, they're Rogues. They're evil for a reason. This had some great Captain Cold moments, and great Rogue moments in general. This is a really, really enjoyable arc, and I'm right back on The Flash. For anyone who cares.
Cool.
And this wasn't the best Scott Collins. There was some really, really shitty work, especially when he draws Iris at the end there. But when he's drawing them in costume, everyone looks great. So if you've missed Scott Collins, he's not as good as he used to be, but he's still pretty damn good when he's doing action stuff. Yeah.
Cool.
Speaking of books I've dropped, you've got a bunch of them.
Nice. I read Titans for some reason.
What is going on with it? Who's doing this book now?
So it's written by...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Dan Abnett with pencils by Paul Pelletier.
I like his art. That was great.
Yeah, it's pretty. Pretty like classic DC style. And I picked this up because it said The Trial of Donna Troy on the cover.
Donna has not been missing, has she? She's been in this book from
here,
the start.
But I don't know. Like, I haven't really been reading it. So she did something bad or something happened. She was inhabited by someone was controlling her.
A ghost.
Anyway, something happened. And there was bad, and now the League are like, we're shutting the Titans down. And the Titans are like, you can't do that to us. We're not children or something. Anyway, that's about it.
Is it good?
I think I would be hard-pressed to say it was good, but it was fine.
Okay, it was fine. The end. It was fine. Great. Another fine book.
Yep.
So I read New Superman this week, issue number 19.
Same.
What a great book.
What a great book, you guys.
This one had a Philian writer by way of Mariko Tamaki, who we love.
I think she nailed it.
And so this is a one-shot about Lainey Lan, who is the reporter who knows more about the world of the Chinese Justice League than New Superman does himself. And this featured art by Brent Peoples with inks by Richard Friend and colors by Hi-Fi. And I thought this was just a really competent little one-shot expanding the world of New Superman. Mm-hmm. We're just about to have a semi-relaunch of this book, which is now going to be called New Superman and the Justice League of China. But really, it's just like, you know, a natural growth of what this book has kind of been leading to. And I thought this is a great issue to have before that happens.
Yep, really enjoyable.
It's a great book. I mean, it's one of the unsung heroes of the DC lineup, I think.
I agree. Absolutely. It's got... they've really built up a great universe, and there's a lot of fun with these characters.
Red Hood and the Outlaws, issue number 18. I'll just talk about it quickly. I think I missed a bunch of issues because I'm not enjoying... Bizarro is a genius now. Which means he just wears glasses.
Cool.
And
does he still talk backwards?
No. But there's like this little weird Superman doll that only he can see that talks to him, so he is still going crazy. Pros about this issue is the Creeper is in it.
I feel exhausted by this.
Yeah, there's enough going on. This was once a really, really great underrated book, but I don't love what's going on with Bizarro now, but it looks like he's about to do something stupid and evil and jump in a bunch of kryptonite.
Great.
Synthetic kryptonite, so who knows what the fuck is going to happen to him. But hopefully it means he won't be a genius anymore, because I liked it better when he was like this, like...
A big dumb guy.
Yeah. I love big dumb guys.
Same. I read Wonder Woman, issue 38, mm-hmm. Swan Song, part one. And you know what I think is an unappealing element of DC Rebirth?
A swan singing a song.
Swans singing songs. No. Just retelling old story arcs. Right. So there is a Wonder Woman villain, I feel like from like the 90s, I can't think of exactly when, but her name is Silver Swan, I believe, and she was like Wonder Woman's best friend, Wonder Woman's biggest fan, got in an accident, lost the use of her legs, went crazy, now has wings or something. And they just basically retell this through her perspective. James Robinson does an okay job. I really do like the art from Emanuela Lupacino and Ray McCarthy on inks. I don't really like James Robinson's voice for Diana. I don't think he's nailed it. And this ongoing arc where, like, her twin brother Jason is, like, turning her sweet beach house into a party house and is like, I just want a party. I've never been on the mainland. I was a sea captain this whole time or whatever. Anyway, it's pretty silly.
Yeah, I'm glad I dropped this.
It's not great.
But I'm glad you're still reading it so I can not feel regret every time you
I will continue to read it.
Talking about Detective Comics this week, issue number 972, written by James Tinian IV, with art by someone. We'll get to him. But this
great
issue,
art, though.
Really great art. This issue is all about Clayface going full evil. He's been driven to evil. Art by Miguel Mendoza. Mendoza, wish your girlfriend was hot like me. I bet he gets it a lot. Diana Egea on inks and Jason Wright on colors. If they want to get to the point where Gotham City finally disavows Batman and this big team of bat people that he's assembled, like, just get to it. I'm sick of every arc being like, well, actually, Batman shouldn't have a team of bat people. And this is why. And, like, I feel like every single character that's not in the team is against the team. And yep. Every arc is about them trying to prove to Gotham that the team is not good. By, yep. like, doing a bunch of shit things to all the members on the team. I don't know.
And then it's also still, like, this victim society thing. And why is victim, that guy yeah. always just bleeding?
Yeah, just covered in blood. I can't remember what happened to him.
And
yeah.
anarchy. Yeah. Boring. Boring,
look,
boring, boring.
I know the Clayface going evil again arc was inevitable. I just I hope he doesn't undo all the good work he's done as a good guy, because I enjoy him being a good guy. He's another big dumb guy. We love big dumb guys.
I love a big dumb guy, and I liked his ongoing relationship with Cass, friendship with Cass.
Yep. Gerard Butler, another big dumb guy. I love
Gerard Butler.
He should be in this book.
He should be.
Then Gotham would be really on board with the team of bat people.
I agree.
Siobhan is busily texting someone important
sorry,
in her life.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm going to talk about Mr. Miracle.
Great. Excellent.
Because you didn't read it this week.
I did not read it.
Is this just where we're moving from this point?
I don't know. I just left it to the bottom of my pile for ages because I was like, oh, I know it's going to make me like sad or something. And then I'm going to have to try and justify why I don't like Tom King. And even though I know it's technically good or whatever. You know what I think? I'm just going to... I keep trying to,
you would have
to, like,
been the most on board with this issue, I think.
Yeah? I keep trying to figure out why, what it is about Tom King's, like, current vibe that he's doing that is not appealing to me. And I think that there's something about the way that... Like, I think that people who are really clever use the genre of superhero comics to say things, whereas he's just saying it and putting superheroes on top of it.
Right.
Putting a mask on top of it and going, like, yeah, that's superhero
comics. What do you think he's saying with the series?
War is bad. PTSD is a thing.
I don't know if I get that from this. I think this is like a much also about like how, why it's so important to have someone important in your life.
Yep, true.
This issue is Big Barter and Mr. Miracle fighting their way through to Orion, where they plan to kill him before he kills Mr. Miracle. And so it's them like kind of like making their way through like this ridiculous amount of defenses that he's set up for them to get through. They're fighting their way through monsters, through guards, through traps, mm-hmm. through all kinds of shit. It's brilliantly drawn. Like, art-wise, this is my favorite issue. Really, really cool art by Mitch Gerrits.
There's some really fun use of like...
Non-panel grid
like structures.
Negative
space and stuff like that.
Yeah. All the while they're fighting their way through to Orion, Barter and Mr. Miracle aren't talking about the battle at all. They're just doing that like it's second nature to them. The whole time all they're doing is talking about renovating their house and divvying up their living space in a more efficient way and getting rid of stuff and like, you know, it's just real mundane couple stuff. But it's really amusing, the juxtaposition of them having quite an in-depth discussion about that as they kill enormous beasts and narrowly avoid death traps again and again and again without really batting an eyelid. And then when they get to Orion, there is a big surprise, which I won't spoil for you.
Great.
But that's when you get the emotional punch. But it's only over 2 pages this time instead of an entire issue. So I thought maybe you would have appreciated that.
Maybe.
I really
we'll
like
never
this issue.
Know.
No, you've got it. I reckon you should read it.
All right.
Before you pick up the rest of the comics you have to read today. Did you not read Michael Cray issue number 4?
No, I didn't. Guys, I'm all over the place. I didn't even realize that came out.
This is what the book that I read when I was like, oh, I'm so sick of comics. I can't read comics while I'm on holiday. This sucks. And I was like, I know, I'll read Michael Kray. And I was like, oh, no, I love comics. Comics are great. Michael Kray is a tie-in book to the Wildstorm books that Warren Ellis is doing at the moment for DC. It's been written by Brian Hill, who this week on Twitter gave a really great theory about he wants Rey to be the one to choose the dark side in Star Wars.
I not still Kylo haven't Ren. Seen... thingy.
But yeah, check out Brian Hill's Twitter if you want to read a fun little theory. And art by N. Stephen Harris with Dexter Vines and Diabla Kelly. And this book is basically about Michael Kray, who is an ex, you know, kind of government agent who has these weird powers that he can't work out what they are, but they're very, very destructive. Mm-hmm. It's him being forced to assemble a team to take down different superpowered individuals in the Wildstorm universe, except all these individuals are the counterparts of the most beloved heroes in the DC universe. So we saw him take down Green Arrow.
That was a great issue.
And this issue sees him go head-to-head against Barry Allen. Mm-hmm. Barry Allen is a much different version to what we know and love him for. And he's actually someone who uses his speed force to kill people.
Oh, no, Barry.
And so Michael Kray's been tasked with taking him down. It's a really, really interesting...
Is it a different artist?
No, I think it's the same one.
Oh, well, it looks great. Maybe.
Yeah, there are parts of sloppiness, but it kind of works. I don't know. His faces are a bit mongy sometimes. Mm. But, yeah, it really works sometimes and other times it doesn't. It looks like the next villain... Well, it is. The next guy he's got to take down is a real-life Aquaman.
Cool.
He's a literal under-the-water man-eating monster.
He got spikes.
Yeah, looks really fun. I love this book. I think it's really, really cool.
It's so silly and it's so good fun.
It's a great addition to the Wildstorm stuff and also just a great fun way to kind of navigate a different DC universe.
Absolutely.
Those are our DC books for the week.
Woo!
Image is where we go next. And you've read one Image book. And
I know.
It's like the only one I didn't read this week.
Yeah, cool. Well, I read Witchblade.
I have eight.
I know, I'm so sorry. There were a bunch that I just didn't get to. And then also ones that I picked up and...
Oh, wait, no, that's a boom. I read six.
Didn't realize. Six. I got the wrong issues of a bunch of stuff because I'm dumb. But I read Witchblade issue 2, written by Caitlin Kittredge. Oh, I'm just gonna check out art by Roberta Ingranata, colors by Brian Valenza. And I think this is probably the first time that Witchblade has had an almost all female
great
creative team, which is pretty good fun. And so this is about Witchblade, Alex, whatever her name is, coming to terms with her powers and dealing with like scary shit that's happening around her. I actually really like it. I think it's good.
Great.
I'm surprised that I like a Witchblade comic, but I think it's like a great sort of police procedural plus magic powers at the moment. It's good. Good fun. Sure.
Cool.
I'm into it.
I read Sleepless issue number 2, written by Sarah Vaughan, with art by Leila Del Duca.
I was so excited about this, and then I got home and I realized I picked up issue 1 again.
Colors by Alyssa Sala. And this is about like a kind of... somewhat of a fantasy book in which a princess has everyone in the royal family has appointed someone who never sleeps to guard them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what the Sleepless refers to. In this issue, we saw the main sleepless guy who is appointed to the kind of star of this comic, the princess, kind of talk to other sleepless people in the kingdom.
Oh, cool.
And they're like, you know, how long has it been since you last slept? And they're like, you know, a few years, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, you come to, you know, are you starting to see weird visions? And he's like, no. So like, obviously all sleepless agents, I guess, go mad at some point.
You got to assume.
But then it's kind of expanded her relationship with her mother, who was in a different kingdom, and she was expecting to come visit her, but she's instead sent people to come visit and told her that she has to stay away from... So basically, the star of this comic desperately wants to leave the kingdom she's been appointed to and can't.
Mm.
And yeah, it's a really, really different... It's a slower book that what I'm used to from like an Image kind of, you know, sword and sand. Not sword and sand, sort of like, you know, royal romp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, really enjoying it. It's a great world. The art and colors are excellent and so well matched to the story.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to see like so many genres that we don't necessarily see a huge amount of time in comics coming through in like current Image stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like I keep expecting like a massive supernatural threat to befall the kingdom, but I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I'm hoping this is going to be like quite a straight kind of, you know, obviously there are a few quirks within it, but mostly
like a sort of almost historical fiction, yes, romance-y thing.
Definitely.
Great.
Yeah, really, really enjoying it.
That's all I want.
Real cool. Did you not read Royal City this week?
No.
Royal City, issue number 9, written and drawn by Jeff Lemire.
We're having the worst time, guys.
I think we're like one.
I read Witchblade and I didn't read Royal City.
We've got one issue left of this extremely saddening arc of the last week of Tommy from the family's life. And Tommy, of course, is the character that various characters within Royal City see in ghost form, but throughout different ages of his would-be life, which is a really interesting mechanism. We see... Basically, this is a great way to see kind of, you know, the way the family were in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few moments in this where you see characters make decisions that lead to them get to where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great moment where one of the characters quits his job at that factory that some of the other characters still work at. It's, you know, been a big part of this family's life. And there's a really, you know, it's one of the few nice moments of this. You know, it's quite a depressing comic, but it makes the father just, you know, there's this great three panels of him cracking a smile at after his son quits his job.
Ah, great.
He tells his dad that he quits. It's really nice. His dad, he's finally accepting that the factory is not for him, and it's time to do something else with his life.
I think the dad is the character that makes me like the happiest and saddest in Royal City.
Yes, definitely. Because he just loves radios.
I love radios. I love dads.
Try and track this down because it would suck if you fell behind on Royal City.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses, issue number 31. I have to clear my throat for a moment.
So sorry.
You want to talk about Stray Bullets, a comic you've never read?
A comic, I've only read one issue of it. It was really distressing, but it looks great.
It's written and drawn by David Laffam. And this is now, we're getting very, very close to this weird, what I thought was going to be a mini-series that filled the gaps in between some issues of his original 40-issue run of Stray Bullets. We're at 31 now, which means I think that this what I thought was going to be a mini-series is going to surpass the main series itself. It is this just increasingly insane romp of three characters versus two characters.
Cool.
You know when a great thing that a lot of comics do, where they spend an entire issue introducing a character that's really, really badass and dangerous, and like, you know, most of the characters in the comic are really afraid of them, and then just disposes the character before the issue is over in a almost comical way?
Yeah.
This issue does that.
Great.
And it's it ends with one of the characters covered in that character's brains.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Fun, grim stuff.
This seems like one of those comics that, like, you're so glad it's in black and white, because if it was in color, it would be too much.
Yep, 100%. I love this book. I hope one day you do smash it all out. It's so good. It's so up your alley.
Yeah, I know.
Because the main character, Beth, is like just such an incredibly strong character, and so much of the turmoil is because of her own actions. But you still root for her as a hero, even though like all of the bullshit that gets thrown her way is her own fault in a way, but it isn't. And like, you know, it's just part of the fucked up world that she's a part of.
Amazing.
Yeah. Eternal Empire, issue number 6, written by Jonathan Luna and Sarah Vaughan, with art by Jonathan Luna. this is, the same writer as Sleepless, Sarah Vaughan.
I hadn't made that connection.
Yeah,
there you go. Cool.
And this has been like a long journey of these two people that escape this kind of like slave-like lifestyle that they're a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And then find that when they're near each other, they have like superpowers. They can bring these big fire swords out.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they've meet their parents, who are dragons.
Great.
They learn more of this kind of legend that they play a role in.
How are their parents dragons?
Well, they were hatched out of eggs, these children.
Mm.
And there were three of them. The third one is someone evil.
Cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So
what a great silly fantasy concept. I'm super into that.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And like it's a lot about like there's a, you know, when like something big in high fantasy goes, like you learn the politics of this fantasy world.
Mm.
This issue does that. And cool. It can be very hit and miss, but this was a hit for me.
Awesome.
Slots, issue number 4, written and drawn by Dan Panosian. This
on
is
on my list of things to read.
This is the kind of Las Vegas gritty,
grimy underbelly.
Yeah, but kind of a celebration of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the, you know, the burlesque dancing, and then the underground fight, the boxing, and we see like kind of like once disgraced boxer come back to Las Vegas, where his son is now a boxer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he has this plan to kind of turn his tables right.
Mm-hmm.
And like, meanwhile, there's like, you know, like the daughter of a casino owner is being like they're trying to like win her over to another casino,
mm-hmm.
and offering her up unknown riches. The bulk of this issue is about boxing. It reminds me a lot of Snatch,
Guy
Ritchie movie, which I'm sure if I saw again now I would hate, but when I saw it in high school I loved it.
Absolutely. Keep that memory alive.
And I kind of enjoyed making that comparison. I love this book. It looks great. And
it's so cool.
And it's firing on all cylinders in terms of plot now, and I know who all the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had that one expository issue, and now it's just moving at a good pace.
Awesome.
Great issue. Port of Earth this week. Did you fall off on this?
Yes, I did.
Oh, it's a bummer.
I didn't heaps like the two main characters.
It's gotten better, okay. Because they're not the two main characters anymore. There are more characters who are like, hey, you two main characters, you're fucking up.
Nice.
Port of Earth is about what if aliens came to Earth and were like, can we use your Earth as a port?
Mm-hmm.
And in return, we'll give you this, you know, weird technology that can turn water into electricity, basically, and save all of your problems. In return, they're allowed to use Earth as a port, no questions asked. We have like a team that are basically like they're tasked with protecting not so much the Earth from the aliens, but the aliens from the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of both go hand in hand. But what this comic excels at is kind of like giving us glimpses into the world through like news interviews with different figures,
mm-hmm.
who are profiting from the aliens using Earth as a port.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really fascinating look at this book. This one, we see someone who, like, you know, justifying the H2O technologies that they have,
mm-hmm.
versus like we learn that so many people were put out of a job when all these other technologies were made redundant.
And right, of course.
Maybe it was not a good thing because we were actually quite close to being a very green energy using world,
mm-hmm.
before they just up and just turn it all into water-based electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really like this book. And then meanwhile, there is a bunch of officers who are kind of tasked with tracking down this alien. We don't know what this alien wants to do. We just know, mm-hmm. that he's a threat at this point. But maybe man is the greatest threat of all, Shimon.
True. Agreed.
Yeah, it's a great issue. I really, really enjoyed Port of Earth this week. Like, good image week.
Yeah, I'm so sad I didn't read any of them.
hey, at least you read Witchblade.
I read Witchblade.
The last thing we're going to do.
It's not bad.
The last thing we're going to do on this issue episode is review all of the other publishers that we reviewed, read books of.
I did a bit better on this one.
Let's kick things off with Boom, because Boom had some good ones this week. Judas, issue 2 of 4, written by Jeff Loveness with art by Jacob Rebelka. A story about the New Testament biblical figure Judas, the man who betrayed Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, this kind of comic asks, hey, well, I mean, God was the one who made Judas the villain, and is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
And in this, we meet none other than the first angel to be sent down to hell. What's his name?
Lucifer.
Lucifer.
He owns a nightclub in Vertigo.
We kind of like this. The whole thing is about exploring the role of a villain in a story, but through biblical means. But really, it's about villains in general and how stories necessitate their existence.
This is fun.
It's really, really fun. It's
really good. The art is gorgeous, and like the ideas that they're playing with, like I'm sure they've been explored in other areas, but I've never considered certain biblical elements this way, and like I think it's really good fun. Like the fact that we see Jesus might be in hell.
Yeah.
Jesus is in hell because that's the sacrifice. That's the real sacrifice that he made. I think that's a clever idea. And it looks so gorgeous.
Yeah, great the book. Art, incredible painted art by Jacob Rebelka. It's really, really great.
Yeah, I love it.
It looks like oil painting almost.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's really good. Mech Cadet U, issue number 5, came out this week through Boom Studios. And
I love this book.
Yeah, these two books are probably my favorite books of the week. Written by Greg Pak with art by Takeshi Miyazawa and colors by Toriona Farrell. This book is basically about a young crew of cadets who
control mechs.
Control mechs, that's right. And it's, you know, big kind of tribute to kaiju and robo anime,
mm-hmm.
and manga. In this book, they're after kind of like, you know, going against orders, they're all forced to join the janitorial cadets, which mm-hmm. is what the main character was a, like his mother is like kind of the leader of that, and that they're forced to clean up their mess after, like, you know, taking on some big bugs against orders.
Big crab kaiju guys.
Yeah. And this book is just great balancing. We're learning more about each of the four kids who have the mechs, and mm-hmm. In particular, the kind of relationship between the son of the janitor and the daughter of the general,
mm-hmm.
And how different they are, and how you just want them to be friends, but every time, you know, they give a centimeter, they then take away an inch from that friendship. And yeah, it's great.
It's really good fun, guys.
And then you have like this kind of like star soldier mm-hmm. who is kind of training them in secret
mm-hmm.
with the Nerf guns.
Yep.
Just great. Just so much fun. And then you have the very real threat of these enormous bug crab creatures. Yeah. Great issue.
Absolutely. Really, really great issue. Can't recommend this series enough.
And just like, yeah, I mean, buy this for kids in your life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's just like a great introduction to how good comics can be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you read Sword of Ages?
Nah, it was on my pile.
I understand why you wouldn't. This is the new book by Gabriel Rodriguez, who mm-hmm. is the artist on Lock and Key
mm-hmm.
And various other projects with Joe Hill. It looks just incredible. Like for me, this is like slightly more appealing as a book than what's Rick Remender's 7 to Eternity.
Yeah.
It's similar, big high fantasy book. The problem that I have with this book is that it divvies the story up and focuses on four different storylines and groups of characters at the same time who haven't really met yet and haven't really. So essentially, it's almost like an anthology almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of people to remember and kind of worlds to remember and dialects to remember, which is kind of what turns me off the fantasy genre as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But the core main story, which we see like a female warrior pick up the Sword of Ages, and she finally does that on the final page of this issue. That's really compelling and fun, and so that's enough to kind of anchor me and keep me going through this story. I mean, the art is, I'll pick this up just to look at the art.
It's gorgeous.
It's so good. But I'm hoping that the all the plot lines come together at some point soon, so it's less confusing to read month to month. But I'd still recommend it. It's a beautiful looking book.
Hmm.
Archie, should we go into the Archie zone?
Might as well.
Archie, issue number 27. If you were going to tap out of this series, I think this issue almost gave you, like,
gave me a very convenient out.
So this is written by Mark Waid with art by Audrey Mock.
Is this the end of Mark Waid's?
I don't know. Run? I don't think so. Audrey Mock still did the cover for the next issue. Colors with Wade Kelly Fitzpatrick.
I love Audrey Mock.
And yeah, I think she's just the perfect fit for Archie. Probably my favorite artist on this book since Veronica Fish.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I love Derek Charm too. But I don't know if Derek Charm ever did the main series.
No, he just did.
Jughead. So basically we see the answer given to both Archie and
Dilton,
after they're told to choose.
Mm-hmm.
By Veronica and Betty,
mm-hmm.
and both of them are knocked back by Betty.
Mm-hmm.
Do they actually say this is the start of a beautiful friendship? That shit's corny.
This was this felt like Mark Waid wrote this in like half an hour. Was like, I just need to get this done.
Yeah.
And it was like, whatever. And Betty can walk again.
It has an epilogue. Oh, wait, really? I didn't even notice that. That's so funny. Fuck, she can too.
Yeah.
What the fuck? How does she walk again?
She just worked really hard at it and practiced lots, and now she can walk again. That's how it works.
She's slowly walking upstairs. Yeah, right. Okay, sure.
But the epilogue where Archie, like...
That's so funny. It was lost on me completely.
Like, I understand that throughout the series, we have had Archie talking to the camera and stuff like that, but when he, like, does the big, like, turns to camera and is like, well, I've had a lot of adventures this year.
And then he goes
come back anytime.
He goes through each of his adventures.
Yeah.
Like, we get it, Wade. You've written 37 issues. Like,
just good lord.
Do a recap page at the start if you need to. I think you did.
I thought that was a really, really corny ending.
Yeah, super clunky and dumb ending.
Yeah.
But then we get, like, I was like, oh, cool, I guess I can stop reading this now. But then we get a little tease of Reggie selling the information about the Blossom Twins to mm-hmm. his father, who runs the Riverdale Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's fun. Maybe I do want to keep reading this and see what happens.
Yeah, just whatever.
Sorry, I issued 27, not 37.
Look, if I would love it if they shook it up a bit and gave someone else a chance to write the book.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think it's like Mark Waid's told his story. I'd love it if Audrey Mock continued, but I'm down to see someone else.
Yeah, I totally agree. It doesn't look like... I can't see Archie Comics issue number 28. Here we go. Solicitations. I'm going to find out who wrote this 28th issue. It's taking a while because your internet sucks, Siobhan.
It sure does.
It's written by Mark Waid with somebody, Flynn. Ian Flynn? Is that a writer?
I mean, could be.
It just says Flynn on the front cover.
Interesting.
This is tedious, I'm sure.
Ooh, is that the person?
Yeah, okay. Ian Flynn. It's written by Mark Waid and Ian Flynn.
Interesting. Ooh, I read a comic by Ian Flynn this week.
All right, cool. Why don't we talk about
it? Me. From Dark Circle Comics, which is Archie's superhero line. Mm-hmm. I read Mighty Crusaders issue 2, which is written by Ian Flynn. Art by Kelsey Shannon. Lettering by Jack Morelli. Colors by Matt Herms. This is sort of... I was trying to think of, the right sort of comparison to this. It kind of reminds me of, West Coast Avengers or something like that. Sort of sure. Late 90s-y. It's not real... it's not a comedy book, but it's just kind of a... It's a really solid superhero book.
Oh, cool.
Without a huge overexpanded universe around it. And I really like it. I think it's good fun. I think they sort of have all this sort of strong, usual superhero archetypal characters in there. We've got a team led by this female S.H.I.E.L.D., so there's, an element of legacy as well. And she's got this, just really solid team around her, and they're just learning how to be a superhero team, guys.
Awesome. So I love it. Do you reckon, based on that, would you be happy if Ian Flynn took over the Archie books?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's writing the next arc with Waid.
Cool. I'm on board. I'll check it out.
There you go.
The Mighty Crusaders is real good.
So the final Archie book that I read this week was...
I didn't read this.
The Archies, which is just a bizarre book because... This issue was the Archies with the monkeys. And this issue exists because someone throws a shoe at Archie's head while he's performing. And then he imagines that he and the monkeys, that the Archies and the monkeys have to play together.
Oh my God. And they've tried to do 70s style Archie art.
But it's fucking, what's his name? It's Joe Eisman doing it.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
I don't like Eisman's art. This is written by Matt Rosenberg and... someone, Segura.
It's got
Alex
a gorgeous
Segura.
Greg Smallwood cover.
Oh, that's why I picked it up. Incredible Smallwood cover. Anyway, so after a fairly forgettable romp with the monkeys, which then ends with Archie waking up and them going oh, they're getting worse.
Blug.
Guess who the next band to tie into this bizarre book is?
I don't know.
Tegan and Sarah.
Oh, I did know that.
So the next issue, guest stars Tegan and Sarah. Great. Fine. Another great Greg Smallwood cover. But yeah, very, very strange. I don't know who this is for.
Hugely not for me. I can say that fairly confidently.
I don't know. Should I keep reading this just because it's so weird? I almost want to keep reading it just so I can then turn the page and be like, oh, okay. And then the next tie-in is this band.
Yeah.
Very weird.
That's kind of fun.
You read an Aftershock book this week.
I did. I read Monstro Mechanica issue 2 by Paul Allor and Chris Evenhuis.
And this is Da Vinci...
Da Vinci and Lady Wearing Pants have a big automaton, and she is like, I think that it has a brain and I'm trying to make it a human. And Da Vinci's like, no, it's a tool. It must be treated as such. and so it's all sort of Roman Medici era shenanigans. Machiavelli is a character. It's all very silly, but the art's really great. The colors are gorgeous. I think it's really fun. Silly. I like it.
I just looked up the solicitations for the following month for Archie.
Oh, yeah?
And the Archie's issue 6 guest stars Blondie.
Ooh. Look, if this wasn't drawn by Joe Eisma, I would maybe have more time for it.
The cover is fucking incredible.
Is it another Greg Smallwood one?
Yeah. And on the Smallwood thing, so look at that cover. That's a brilliant cover. It's black and white with
that is beautiful.
Pinks. And it's just, was it Debbie?
Debbie Harry
with
Betty and Veronica.
Betty and Veronica.
Gorgeous.
Okay, great. And then, but on the Greg Smallwood front, I forgot about this.
Mm.
2 months from now, Vampironica launches.
Yes, and he's doing the interiors on that, huh?
Written and drawn by Greg and Megan Smallwood.
I'm so on board.
So cool. It looks great. Looks great. So, yeah, when Veronica is bitten by a centuries-old vampire, her thirst for blood threatens to turn Riverdale into a haven for the undead.
Woo.
Great.
On board.
Sounds good. Better than Monstro. You gonna keep with this Monstro Mechanica book?
Yeah, I am. It's not incredible, but I really like the art, so I'm gonna continue with it.
Awesome. Grass Kings, issue number 11. Did you?
I'm going to be sad about the next two issues that you talk about because I didn't read either of them. Because I don't understand. I don't know what day it is. I don't know what time it is. I don't know where I live.
Well, I forgot to include this in our Boom rundown.
But I read some silly things instead of some great things.
Yeah. So this brings to an end the kind of mystery that they've been trying to solve about this woman in the community. Grass Kings is like a gated kind of off the beaten track community, independent community away from America, their own sovereign nation.
Yep.
And within it is a woman who is found murdered many years ago. And some characters are finally kind of looking into that murder in depth. And we learn one take on how that character died. And it's quite tragic and accidental and about infidelity more than it is about murder and bloodlust.
Cool.
This is written by Matt Kent with Tyler Jenkins and Hillary Jenkins on art. And they've been doing these weird variants now, which look like pulpy romance novels.
I love that.
So I'm just collecting all those now. It's a brilliantly printed book too. This was a really, really satisfying conclusion to a very, very sad situation.
Such great, like, small scale community dramas.
Totally. So this is the end of book two of Grass Kings. So we get a new arc starting next issue.
Great.
And I found this really, really satisfying and compelling.
I'm so annoyed with myself.
So you didn't read Ghost Money, 6 of 10. Man, you gotta treat yourself to this issue. It's so good.
Okay.
This is written by Terry Smolderin with art by Dominique Bateille. It's the this is written specifically for Lionforge and the Magnetic Collection Lionforge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the first print. I don't know, it's a translation. I don't know, fuck.
Whatever. It's great.
It's this crazy, crazy book. This issue goes 10 times crazier than any issue before. There are, like, sex robots.
Cool.
But the bulk of this is about, like, basically trying to find out what happened to, like, there's rumors that some Middle Eastern people played, Middle Eastern government played the stock market on September 11, like knowing that was going to happen and whatever, betting against, I don't know how the stocks work, but they basically made a ton of money off the stock market knowing that September 11 was going to happen.
Right.
And so this is about the American government, CIA, trying to track down where that money is, who has that money. They have a suspect, and the bulk of this story is kind of told from that suspect's eyes, literally, because the government creates this software that they put in this character so they can see everything she does from her eyes.
Yep.
And then there are characters on that government team who have become addicted to looking at the world through her eyes, and it's the only thing that makes them feel anything in this world.
Amazing.
Meanwhile, a woman who she met at a protest rally fell in love with this character, and the last issue saw her kind of narrowly escape a terrorist attack, and this issue has her learning about the technology that's been implanted in the character and not able to tell her.
Oh my god.
And it's like, it's so fucking crazy. There's so many moving parts and different people, but it's really, really well told comics that you can follow the whole way through. It looks beautiful. Their use of breaking out of the panels is just fantastic. The colors are great.
It's such a good comic.
Has everything.
Yeah.
It's this crazy future story with that's like just political enough that then it was also like super far out insanity going on that you never feel like dragged down by the politics and the character development of the despicable characters have development, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, it's great. I love this comic. It's far and away.
And it's going to be one that like reads incredibly in trade, I think.
It's going like, I reckon that this is going to be like one of the ones that we see like optioned for a movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's so crazy.
Yeah.
And, like, I would love, this is one of those ones that like are not, it's not like your Saga or your Why the Last Man like comics that I love that I never want to see turn into movies. I would love to see someone attempt to turn this into a movie because it's
good luck, guys.
It's drawn like a movie.
Yeah, it is. So, it's very cinematic.
Yeah. It's really good. Anyway.
Good fun.
So good. So please, I'm sure that I reckon the first volume of this comes out very soon.
Yeah.
Ghost Money, 6 of 10. Check it out.
Great.
Next up, let's go through a couple comics that weren't very good. Oh, I didn't even read this.
Yeah, I picked up the cover and then I looked at the interiors and it made me too sad.
Yeah, Barbarella, issue number 2, written by Mike Carey with art by Keenan Urad, through Dynamite.
I don't want to be rude about anyone's art, but it just doesn't appeal to me and I don't like the colours.
Yeah, I kind of, I semi-enjoyed the first issue and then I got like, you know, like 4 or 5 pages into the second issue and it's just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's just extremely not for me.
There we go.
Actually, no, it's dumb. I'm going to stick with dumb.
I read issue 4 of The Fighting American, the Joe Simon and Jack Kirby creation. This is written by Gordon Rennie, pencils by PC De La Fuente and Duke Mighton, also inks by Jed Doherty and colors by Tracy Bailey. This is the time displaced 1950s Captain America vibe bro sent to the future because some communists got sent from the past, blah 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 blah. It's actually I quite like this.
No, I'm very surprised you stuck with this.
Yeah, it was silly, really appealed to me. The first arc is now finished. I kind of like the art's real goofy and the colors are real poppy.
It's like kind of Mike Allred-y.
Almost. Not quite as sophisticated and like definitely some wonkier faces, but I kind of like that. The character punches a dude through time so hard that he feels it today.
Amazing.
And now there's like a whole bunch. It's going to continue, I guess. And I don't know if I'll necessarily continue with it, but the first arc was good fun.
Great. Well, the final book we're going to talk about today is Bloodshot Salvation, issue number 5, out through Valiant, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Luis LaRosa and Miko Sawan, with colors by Diego Rodriguez. This tells a story semi set in the future in which Bloodshot's family tries to contact a presumably dead Bloodshot.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see the actions that led to him, I guess, dying
mm-hmm.
In the past.
Mm-hmm.
And this sees him kind of get aided by Ninjak. I love how all the Valiant characters always show up in each other's book.
Yeah.
He's basically, Ninjak helps him escape this horrendous backwater hick community that mm-hmm. Bloodshot's been trapped in because he had his nanite technology removed from him, or switched off essentially by government. We see him make his first kill, not as Bloodshot, who he's killed millions of people with, but as himself.
As a man.
As a man. And it doesn't feel good, Siobhan. It doesn't feel good at all.
But also satisfying.
But Gerard Butler.
He could play Bloodshot.
He could play Bloodshot. That's good.
He'd be a good Bloodshot. I really like this book a lot. I think Jeff Lemire there's so much in this. There's so much that happens, and mm-hmm. it could only exist in this format, and it could only exist within this world in this very specific context, but he's using it to tell really great, compelling, dramatic stories, and I think it's so good.
Yeah. The one thing I'm not crazy about is the painted artwork. But the next arc is done by Renato Guedes, who I like a lot more.
Who's that? He's
just another Valiant books in the past that I've enjoyed.
Great.
But I tell you what is a real, real bummer is seeing their Kenneth Rocafort art on the cover and then not getting that on interiors.
Yeah.
But I think Kenneth Rocafort is doing a Valiant book from the interiors of that very, very soon. So I'll have that to look forward to soon.
It's great. I love this book.
Yeah.
I love Baby Bloodshot. I love all the Bloodshots.
Yeah, me too. Real good fun. So that is it for the episode this week. Thank you so much for being with us during this troubling time in which we are 2 weeks behind.
In which I didn't read half the books.
Hey, you did okay.
Thanks, man.
Just okay. Agreed. Again, next week is going to be our insane double episode.
Cool.
So, Siobhan, I wish you luck in this harrowing weekend ahead.
Thank you.
We'll be seeing you in another week, dear listener. Less than a week, because it's Wednesday we're putting this up now. And hopefully next episode will be up on a Monday.
Cool.
Provided it doesn't take us 24 hours to record. Which it might. Could very well.
Yeah, I need to read this week's books.
Good luck to both of us.
Yes.
And stay serious until then.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.